So welcome to those on the classroom and for those of you who are online. So we're going to this discovering the Buddhism module called All About Karma. There's a lot to think about, isn't it? But before we do that, hi, come in. Hello, Ruby. Before we do that, we'll take reference together and we'll journey up the mind of life and so forth. So please, just get comfortable in the seat. You want to have your back straight and your shoulders relaxed. You can place your hands wherever you like. And you can either keep your eyes open or close them for a few minutes. So while you continue to breathe normally and naturally, I just want you to notice if there are any movements taking place in your body whenever you inhale or exhale breath. And you can notice movements or feelings that might be taking place as you inhale and exhale. Just try to keep your attention on those areas where movement is taking place or you're aware of feeling taking place whenever you inhale or exhale. And just paying attention to that area allows the body and the mind to relax. And while the process of relaxation continues, the mind remains focused. And while the mind is focused, it's very easy to imagine the presence of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas in this room, and to think that they're slightly above your head in front of you. So imagine this community of enlightened beings have bodies of light. And that while you're in front of them, you're also surrounded by every other living being. And what you have in common with every other living being is a wish to have more happiness than what you have, and a wish to be free of any form of suffering. And in common with every other sentient being, these two wishes have not yet been met. So to be free from suffering and its causes, and to actually have a stable, unchanging form of happiness, we need to rely upon methods to achieve that. And also people who have actually used the methods and have freed themselves from suffering and its causes and developed all the good qualities. I think this is what you'd like to do. You'd like to develop your wisdom and your compassion and every other skill you have, put an end to your own suffering and to help others do the same. And typically you'll do that by relying upon the three jewels of refuge, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So let's take refuge in it for reciting along with me. I go for refuge until I am invited to the Buddha and the Dharma, and this is very intended. By the merits I create through the sentient of the Dharma, may I become the Buddha to them towards sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am invited to the Buddha and the Dharma, and this is very intended. By the merits I create through the sentient of the Dharma, may I become the Buddha to them towards sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha and the Dharma, and this is very intended. By the merits of the creator, the existing truth of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha so that it can all seem to be true. If you look around you, you see all beings are presently suffering. You extend to them a wish that they be free of suffering and its causes, They have happiness in its causes, that they never be separated from the joy of higher rebirths and liberation, that they have light in their community. You also have this wish for yourself, and you determine to develop for yourself the four immeasurable thoughts. Love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. In response to this wish, lights and nectars pour out from the heart of the Buddha and wash over you and all the beings surrounding you. You find yourself possessing immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. In possessing these four mental states, you wish to prostrate before the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas to make them offerings, perform the rite of confession, and so forth. So, reciting along with me, you send them in a prayer. Reverently, I am prostrated by the Holy Spirit. I am trying to get in touch with offering and to know the meaning. I am trying to offer me the vaccines, even when it's since the beginning of summer, and in front of the beginning of the whole world, one day of goodness. We can arrange to be in the and carry the wheel of God over the beings. I bring the wheel of God and find the wheel of God and the hands around the hand. Then, just in case we have any thermal to the actions that we've done, who we are, and the goal, I think if your body, speech, and mind are transformed through your wisdom, realizing selflessness, to appear as a wonderful, pure land whereby you can give teachings to other beings in the future. And you're going to offer this to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas in front of you. So thank you. That this ground, a lotus of death, destroyed its balance, and all of the ground created the four complexes of the world. And the answer this is a good creative offer. My Lord, the minutes in the first building. He has released this offering, and the Buddha has accepted it, and he smiles at you with delight. And you look up into his face and into his eyes, and you feel accepted by the Buddhas, and you feel at ease. Then an emanation of the Buddha leaves his own heart, moves through space, and comes to abide above the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. This emanation descends, entering the crown of your head and going down through your body to rest at the level of your heart. And by the light of the emanation begins to expand, filling the body and mind with light and nectars. And these seep out through the pores of your skin and fill the 10 directions of space. Establishing every living being within an enlightened state. And allow yourself to have the experience of joy, continuing to establish every being in the states of enlightenment. And in the light begins to draw from the 10 directions of space, and it rushes back into your heart. You feel yourself breathing normally and naturally in the seat that you're in. You understand that the exercise we just did was one on the level of imagination, and it has imprinted your mind with the potential to bring about your enlightenment for the benefit of others. And to accept that, and breathe in deeply through your nostrils, exhale through the open mouth, allow your eyes to flutter open, and move your body in the chair the way you want to so that you feel present and at ease. Okay, so let's have a look at what we've studied so far.
Sorry.
So we've had a look at what karma is. So karma is just an action, but it's an action of intention, or thing of action. And karma fits into a larger group of phenomena called causes and conditions. And there are four principles of karma. So I hope by the time you go away from this class, the series, you'll understand or you know what they are, you'll memorize them what they are, but also understand the consequences of that knowledge. So in brief, the first principle of karma is that karma is always one. Karma is,
definite.
It's definite, that's right, it's always definite. But what's definite about karma? The results have causes which are concorded with the result. So tell us what that means in ordinary language.
If you do a bad thing will happen.
Yeah, so the answer, if you do a bad thing will happen. Which actually goes the other way. If a bad thing has already happened, you know the cause is bad.
Because it's of a similar type.
Similar type. So when you experience suffering, you've got to ask yourself, where's the suffering taking place?
In me and in my mind,
right? So there's, okay, so suffering is mental. So what does it mean in terms of the concordant cause?
It has to have been mental.
She didn't say that, but the plot line. That's right. The cause must be mental. The major cause is mental. This is how you put it together, cause and effect. The effect is mental, cause is mental. You say, well, what about all the other things? You say, well, those are called conditions. And some of those could be mental, but they could also be physical. It could be something else. So this means if somebody yells at you, harsh words that upsets you, but you're experiencing upset. And so that's your suffering. What's the cause of it? What's the condition for it? So what is one of the conditions you could say is a contributory cause to my suffering?
The harsh speech.
That's right. Somebody speaking harshly to you is contributing to your suffering, but they're not the major cause of it. Because, you know, if they were just using a harsh speech, you could just block your ears and not hear them, it wouldn't affect you at all.
That's not
the major cause. Major cause has to be the mental part, something else. So this, like I said, this is a very simple, you know, it's only the first of the four principles of karma. You've got to try and like use it. Otherwise, it just remains an abstract phenomenon. It just remains an idea to you. And suffering will keep on happening, and you'll keep on blaming the wrong cause, not putting the, you know, where it actually, what's actually causing it. You'll keep thinking it's the weather or external conditions. That's what we normally do. We look outward and we go, that's the cause. But the out there is not mental, you know, I've got actually some mental instances. But what's the cause? It's how we can call it. The mental thing. The karma delusion. Well, that's where you shouldn't go. This is the result of karma. This is something, it has to be behaviors from a long time ago in the past. What's the other thing you can say about karma, these four principles? So it's definite, right? And the definiteness is, if you experience suffering, it comes from something of non-virtue. If you're having happiness, it's virtue. They're the causes that are concordant. And virtue and non-virtue are mental. It's mind side. So what else can you tell me about karma?
It expands.
What does that mean?
small thing can result in a
big thing. Yeah, that's right. So the big bad result, big heavy cycles we could experience might actually come from something quite small.
So it's like a snowball.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a snowball effect. Or it could be something quite large. This is, you know, life of hell. Yeah, and of course, there's the other two principles. So along that, we look at these 10, we're going through at the moment the 10 non-virtuous paths. So we looked at offensive speech, and then we looked at unwise and unkind sexual conduct. We look at the branches of complete path each time, we went through it, the weight and strength, and the different types of results. So when we, so you're here and you're listening to this material and you're trying to put it together, you probably read the term about it also. So a couple of things to sort of bear in mind. But what we're trying to do here is change our behavior. We're trying to behave in ways of thinking, in ways of speech, and in ways of physical behavior. We're trying to, first of all, decrease suffering. So we're going to say, like I said, I'm going to just not do these things with my body, because that will increase my suffering and the suffering of someone else. So I'm not going to do that. So that's a really nice, easy thing to start to do. Just work out what doesn't work and decide, well, now that I know that that doesn't work, I'm not going to do that. Well, that's the simple part. We just restrain. Just hold ourselves back. Now we've worked out what actually causes the suffering. Thing is, like, what is the suffering we're trying to restrain ourselves from?
Lower rebirths?
Yeah, there's sort of like the future. The future effects, the longer term effects. That's right, but the cause could be right here. So if you actually deal with these causes right here to stop these longer term effects, like unfortunate rebirth effects, or that we find ourselves behaving contrary to our wishes in our behavior, for instance. But then we also have like psychological states. We experience states that are very similar to what we've created in the past. So in other words, so what we're going to do to those is our wrong views. Okay? So, what can happen, so today, right, so there's a lot of wrong views going across the internet and social media, right? Lots of peculiar ideas that you could buy into. So just suppose that you find something interesting online and don't sort of analyze it in such a way that you get a correct read on it. You investigate, analyze in a way to go, I agree, you support this wrong idea. But now you've got a wrong idea. This is called a wrong view, right? And now you're talking to people about it. So here you've got something, you're actually bought into a wrong idea. You go, well, how's that? That's an effect. What if I've done this before? What if I've actually helped other people have wrong ideas? And then you just look at yourself in this life and go, right, I'm doing that right now. Right? I'm born into a wrong idea and I'm sharing it. I'm trying to convince others that this wrong idea is a correct idea. So we have that problem now. We can't see properly. We see it in a mistaken way. So this is how we're affected psychologically from what we've done in the past. And then the behaviors, again, just we keep on doing the behavior. So this is the sort of thing that can happen to us as human beings. So this is the area where they talk about the results of karma. It's primarily about that aspect of karma. Whereas the first one, as you mentioned, Reverend, about the rebirth state. You know, so the karma's really completed, strong enough and so forth, then we take the rebirth state. If we miss the rebirth state because we're virtuous, we still have these other things going on. Where now we have the behavior, now we have the psychological experience of it, re-traumatizing ourselves again. So these are some of the results. And the idea that we studied this karma scene is to like go off to the results and go, these are very bad results. Yeah, and you can look at some of them, you know, if you don't want to go straight to the lower realms, just go to the behavior or the psychological ones and go, well, let's, we're talking about this happened to human beings. I'm a human being. Is this what happens to me? Is this what could happen to me? Do I know other people who could have happened to? And you're going to go, yeah, okay, this makes sense, right? You know people who have bad behaviors. If you know anybody who's an addict, that's the behavior that goes on and on and on. It's a similar type thing here, right? People get into that sort of way of seeing things. Okay, so anyway, so that's what we've done before. Of course, we're going to something similar today. Again, we looked at some of the books that I've relied upon. So I've brought one of them down today. This here is my different sofa. Gospel, I think we might have a couple of questions that come up, and you can answer it very clearly. So I thought we thought of luck, we were pretty quick, didn't we? We sort of finished class. You ask for it's all good material, but like I said, it'll take you years to get your head around this material. But don't wait years until you go, oh, yeah, I'm quiet now. I'm going to have to you don't have to do that. But get the four principles down. Think about that, because that will directly impact your behavior and lead to better outcome for yourself. And again, have a look at this and realize they're really talking about here is long term effects. So it's like we're only here for a little while. We only live so long. And all through that lifetime, we'll always be wanting to be happy. Well, none of us are wanting to experience more suffering and pain. But we're going to want to know, well, how do I do that? How do I lessen my pain and my suffering? How do I increase my happiness? Here are some of the things I can do. And these here are the things I want to avoid because they can bring me these types of pains and sufferings and distress in this life. But also in future lives, I can do the similar types of things again, even worse. So we come to today's class. We're going to look at the three mental paths of non-virtue. And then we're going to focus on what's called the wrong views. Wrong views, just like the non-virtues of speech and body, are made up of parts. So there is a what they call a complete path.
With all the parts.
With all the parts were in place, it becomes a complete path. And this path is sort of like leads you somewhere. To an effect of some type. And that effect will have particular like weight and strength, the action itself because it is heavy or and so forth, will also bring out situations of similar type. These are the results. As you know, like each week, last 3 weeks we've gone through this, we've taken one from the body, one from speech, and today is one from mind. And we've always said it out in this way. So we get a broad overview of the topic. Let's have a look at our first slide here. So we're talking about three mental non-virtues. And we can see here whether they are karmas, counterparts, or afflictions. So first of all, let's look at this one. So the mental factor, okay, so here we can see the mental factor of affliction, the mental factor of intention is a karma. It's not a karma class, it's not an affliction. If you go down to the next one, the physical and verbal non-virtues, they are karmas and they're karmic paths, but they're not afflictions. The three mental non-virtues are, first of all, they're not karmas. They are karmic paths, and they are afflictions.
So they're afflictions because they're mental, right?
Yeah.
And are they not karmas because they're in my mind? Affecting somebody else's mind?
Now, is this a counter reflection? You can't have something that's reflections are not karmas.
Reflections cause karma.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. They lead to actions, but they're not the actions themselves. So this you probably want to have a look at in His Holiness book, The Foundations of Buddhist Thought, page 238. There is this little table there, and it also talks a little bit about what a karma is, being at the intention, how the different other schools look at it and stuff. There's a lot of history in karma, and the Buddhist presentation is a sort of modern interpretation of what was before. So karma used to have a lot to do with caste.
Externalized.
And then it was just put onto the actions of, you know, talking body karma and verbal karma and so forth. The Buddha sort of defined that karma is intention. The intention that brings around the action. But let's quickly have a look at some of these non-virtues. We'll begin with our covetousness. And this is described as, or defined as, a desire that prevents the wealth of another. Now, this wealth could be a possession or a quality. So, you know, so sometimes when I haven't been in the shopping, so in terms of this, you know, the covetous, right? So we know it is a karmic path. It's the lightness of the non-virtuous mental paths. So we've got covetousness, malice, and wrong views. So these are the three afflictions, right? Mental karma. They're afflictions. So this one here, if you look at what in terms of lightness and heaviness, this is the lightest one. So you're seeing what somebody else has got, right? Somebody else is possessing something. The quality could be something they actually have. And you want it. Now, I'm sure all of us have had that experience. Read it or seen it in the movies. Somebody has something and somebody else wants it. But that's called covetousness. And of course, you've got to have the four parts in place to make a complete path. So you have to have a basis. So the basis is like the possession or the wealth that you are seeking to you covet. Then you have to have an attitude to covet. So an attitude, you have to correctly identify what it is that you actually covet. Is it the other person's car, is it their wife, their husband, their wealth, their house, their status? So, you know, you've got to, it's like that. That's what I want. Let's go identify that. And then just go, so what's driving that? What? Is it, is it hatred? I mean, that you'd like to take that thing from the other person and make them
suffer.
Then you want it because, you know, if I take it and I've got it, it means so much to them, it'll crush them. So people have done that, haven't they? I mean, people have acted like that. Could it be that you just like, you think this thing is so great that you want it for you? Because then you think, now, I'll have a great one. I'll have the house. I'll have the beautiful man or woman. I'll have the degree. So then we have the desire, the principle.
Or the promotion at work. Job.
Yeah, this is right. And, so, and then lastly, there's this desire to make that object your own. So those three are in place. You have the correct attitude. The attitude's complete.
This say motivated by ignorance just be when you buy into. You know, the suburban dream or something, just like I just want what everyone else has, and 2.5 kids and a perfect job and a picket fence house, and then it'll be great. Is that?
Yeah, you can cover that. Sure.
But is that motivated by ignorance, or is that just motivated, that's desire more?
Your desire is to be the aspect of ignorance because you think this will produce happiness for you. You know, so, I mean, that's how I spend my money, you know, make people happy. So it's look around for, well, if people are happy, what have they got? Yeah. Now, if I have what they've got, surely I'll be happy. And, of course, it doesn't pan out that way.
So, if you just think forward.
Yeah, this is probably that's right. You just have got colors as if it's primarily the mental to that thing to go and take it or get it. But it's complete. Sorry?
So I had a thought because I like my neighbors from saving.
Yep. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what you're going to want. You want to obtain it.
Right.
Well, it's not complete yet. But that's the action. We've got through the action. Right? The action is that part. I'm going to get that. That's the action part. How's it completed? Well, you have a determination to actually obtain the object. And to be complete, these five factors are necessary. You have to be very attached to this as a possession. You want it to have it like war. You long to examine and experience the possession of others. You have to think that what another person has really should be yours. And then you actually don't want to be free from this idea. But you want to follow it through and have, get it.
Yeah, so if covetousness is completed by trying to get the thing, how is that different from stealing?
Well, stealing is when the object's not freely given. Well, I guess they could be an act of stealing cover and then steal it, sure. But the cover's has got this whole mental thing going on. Yes, it could easily be just stealing, isn't it?
So if you're coveting, say, status, you can't steal status. And so it's a broader.
Okay. Yeah, so you have to keep looking at the basis of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So so one of the ways, of course, you have to have enough time to do this if you want to. To have these questions, like I've set up these tables, you see, like a group. That's what you sort of have to do. Well, you don't have to. But it's helpful. But if you go through the books, of course, you'll see they're sort of set out like tables. But they're not interconnected. And that's what we're sort of going to do. Go, oh, here's the languages. Here's another table about how it's all made up. And here's another one about the strength. And here's another one about the performance. So when I look at one of these factors, you're going to go, well, there's a strength to that, and there's a heaviness to that. So it's interesting that they say, even if you don't have, even if you do have all the parts in place, it doesn't follow that it's going to be a rebirth, but it could be a rebirth result. If you don't want it, you have to cause the strength. Or perhaps the motivation wasn't there, perhaps the strength of the act wasn't there. All I did, there was a motivation, there was an act, but I wasn't strong. So this is what you sort of got to get your head around. It's like it's so dependent upon so many different factors. And all I'm doing is trying to introduce you to the ways of having these factors divided up. Like the action, well, we've got, like I said, three parts, four parts, five parts, six parts. Depend upon who's instructing you. Then you go look at each of those parts. Well, they have a weight of the strength around them. And then there's more sort of energy. And I should also say too that when we talk about karma, we're talking about it sort of like generally. Because there's only, you have to be sort of achieve a certain state where you can actually look back and say, oh, this effect was because of this. If you want to be specific, it takes quite a bit of mental development to do that. So until you're able to do that, it's like a general information. Generally, it's like this, it's like this. Because as you know, when you sort of start going, it's going to go out. Any of these factors are ultimate enough, it won't be. Something else is going to happen. So that's just... think of us as what working with these categories, but in actual fact, you know, with the accurate part is very fluid. Now, it's not to go to the reverse results, because there are reverse results and depends upon these.
Is it that they're not karma because they're an affliction? Is that
what? Yeah, that's just the major thing. It's like they're different categories of phenomena.
And we just call them actions in a very general term to. We lump them together.
So the category here is the 10 non-virtues. So in these 10 non-virtues, you've got some that are karma and some that are afflictions.
Right.
Because karma and affliction is what produces the suffering. It's not just karma and it's not just affliction.
But often those 10 non-virtues are called the 10 non-virtuous actions, and that's what's...
Yeah, because that falls... Yeah, and so we have to go to the topic. Karmic paths and karma is intention and karmic path. But like I said, so you have got karma as like intention. But then we've also got karma as action, isn't it? But so we have these actions of the body, these actions of speech, and they're called like karmas. Then we have these activities of mind. But here, they're not called karma, they're called afflictions. Because these actually lead to the action. So you've got sort of loosey-goosey mind, and not be too tight on things. I think it's just not this, it's not that. But in here, like I said, these three mental ones are classified as afflictions. So you don't have karmas that they don't cross over, one is the other. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. A different phenomenon. Okay, next one is malice. So you can see here, too, so it's a karmic path. It's heavy, a heavy non-virtuous mental path. They can be motivated by a desire, hatred, or ignorance, but it's always completed with hatred. But malice is the desire to hurt another living being if your thought were acted out. So it's like killing, right? Killing is a thought acted out, isn't it? You have killed. That's an action of the body. There's somebody who is dead. But before you do that, you could want to do that. So that's the malice, the wanting that they be hurt. It could drive the action of the body to commit murder.
So is malice like thoughts of revenge and resentment?
Sort of coming off that, it's more than that. You know, you could resent something happening, but resentment doesn't mean you actually want to have the other person be hurt. But here it has that aspect as well. But something's happened, you don't like it, and then whatever you see as contributing to your confusion, your dislike, you want to hurt that. That's the malice part. But the basis is always a sentient being. So you might not like somebody's car, but that would be malice. You might want to hurt their car.
If you want to smash their cars because you want to hurt them, not the car.
So it's a sentient being. And the worst form of malice is towards holy beings. So as you know, throughout history, people have been really upset with the holy beings, haven't they? And they're often killed. And this is the worst form of malice. You want to destroy someone who's been, you know, could be kind, whatever. We'll talk about that later on, Ruby. That's another part of the karmic discussion. They'll talk about karma that is accumulated and karma that is not accumulated. So there are many times, you know, we have nightmares or we have bad dreams and we kill people and we run away and we hurt them, all those sort of things.
We have daydreams about it.
So is that karma? You can ask that question, huh? Fair enough. And so there's an explanation of that too, about that. We'll talk about that. That's another topic. So the basis of the sitting being the attitude, you have to correctly identify the person you want to hurt. Give me any of the three persons, any of the three poisons. And there is a wish that someone else suffer and experience problems. So that's the attitude of this balance, right? And the action is, I will make them suffer. I will hurt them.
Oh, so colloquially, is that like that thought,
oh,
I'm going to get them?
Yeah, yeah. So I went through this myself. Years ago, these people robbed me. And I knew they had. And it was so difficult to get back there that particular night. So I couldn't get on the side of what I was going to do, to burn their house down. And then I thought, again, and how to deal with it, how to get away with it for a long time. And it was like, every time it came up, I was felt so righteous about it. Then I started to do it. What if their kids are like, oh, God, what are you doing? No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do that. I'll have to wait till I go away. I'll have to wait till I go on holiday and bring the house to come in. But this was just, I looked at it and I go, well, here we go. Here's all the fit for mouths.
And did the house get
first round? Realised when I was going to hang, I was going nuts. That's right. And actually, the other person was so scared. I kept thinking it through, thinking how to get over, how to get where, all the back of the plans. And then somehow, my partner was talking to the husband, and he didn't have any idea what was taking place, right? And then he said to me, why didn't you come and tell me that my wife and my sister had robbed him?
And so he didn't even know.
And my assumption was he did. But it was like we all were together because it was a group thing. The way we did it was really neat. It was really good. But I didn't. Without him discovering right on home, which was 20 minutes driving away, I was going to have a car service that can drop me off. I reached my pocket for my money. It's not me. And I go, oh man, that was smart. But it's just happening. No, it's just the worst thing. So here, this is where it's complete. The sign to inflict harm and planning how to do it. So I did all that. It's a complete action.
So the malice is complete, but say the destroying someone's property or the killing somebody is not complete.
Right.
But the negative thing of malice is complete. Right.
So here it says there are five factors required. Animosity, supported by the strong projection of negative qualities on the cause of the harm. Did that. Impatience for the one harming you. Yeah, I was impatient, yeah. Resentment based on the stored attention on the cause of your anger. Thinking how wonderful it would be if this person were harmed or suffered. Well, I certainly felt that. And then a lacking integrity. So this is before becoming a Buddhist. A lacking integrity and not wanting to be free from the faults of malice. Well, I did want to be free from it towards the end, especially. And then when I heard this fellow say, I had no idea. I just went, let's go with the girls and tell them, no way. They just go ahead and do it.
So is it not wanting to be free from the malice, one where you feel righteous and justified, so you fall on
the word of God? Yeah, and it would be like every time I thought of them or heard of them, I just remember what they done and what to harm them. So I dropped that. So that one I got rid of. But up till I got rid of it, I certainly held on to it. Let's move to Ron's views now. So this is the actual thing we're talking about. That's the current part. It's the heaviest of the things you can do mentally. And as you know, it's an affliction. It's motivated with desire, hatred, or ignorance, and it's completed with a wrong view. So let's just take a hold on. Okay, so wrong views Sometimes when you look at the, when they ask me about what are the causes of suffering? You know, so you could say, well, there's three. So there's hatred, there's ignorance, and then there's desire for attachment. So those are all afflictions. Then around them, but they drive the karma, they drive the acts of killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, our speech and everything like that. So you have these three root ones. Then you also have doubt. What's number five? Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct.
Pride.
Sorry?
Pride.
Pride. Yeah, pride and doubt. So there's the five, and the sixth one is wrong views. And wrong views have five types of wrong view. And so these, I'll just say what they are. So the five wrong views are the view of the transitory collections, is the view holding to extremes, is esteeming unworthy views, esteeming mistaken morality and the citizen, and lastly, there's a wrong view. So I'd like to say a little bit about a couple of these views first of all, and then we go into how they all wound up. So I think we'll start with the last one, the wrong view, and then we'll go to the view of the transitory collections. So the last, so all these views are views of afflictive wisdom.
Mm.
So there's an analysis going on here, they're working out. But the working, what the conclusion you draw is wrong. So now you have this afflictive view, an afflictive way of being in the world. In other words, this view that you've got of being right in the world is going to hurt you, it's going to harm you and others. But the view has come about through your reasoning, and your reasoning is wrong.
So is that something like if you're brought up in a racist household, so it's like a received kind of, you know, cultural worldview from your parents, so you think, say, you know, white people are superior. Is that?
No, not in this particular one. I'll just try to tell you what it is. So we've got five here, so the previous four, they're all wrong views, and this is one, two. Here, wrong view specifically means the nihilistic view that denies the existence of previous and future lives or the cause and effect of karma. So if you have no belief in previous lives and future lives and karma cause and effect, you have a wrong view.
Is that like being a materialist?
Yeah.
Is a wrong view, right? And it's a reasoned position.
Like we could say that you're a materialist, you have the wrong view and it's through reasoning. That's why, like, how do you draw that this view, this wrong view that future lives don't exist? So basically, there's still three arguments you could put forward to. You could say, oh, well, I've never seen it. So that's not a very strong reason. So then you can also believe that the mind is created by the brain. So a lot of people think that, right? That consciousness comes from the brain. But of course, it is not going to be passed in future lives because the brain dies in this life. The consciousness comes from the brain. That's the end of consciousness. That's the end of the person. You're over. It's over. So this is the wrong view. You see, this is the most prevalent view in our society, that consciousness comes from physical material. If you have that view, of course, you shouldn't be, no need to have the view of karma. That won't stand up. That doesn't work. So you work out karma, you work out past and future lives also. So here you are, and of course, very, very difficult to deal with suffering then. And in actual fact, you say you couldn't.
And very little to aim for.
Yeah, this is what makes life so despairing. If you just have this materialistic view, Yeah, it's dead end for you. The wrong views can also take the form of holding certain positive assertions about the nature of reality. One example would be holding that a prime deity or a divine creator is the cause of cyclic existence of all sentient beings. So here's the view of God being a creator, creating the world, creating us. So here, this is the wrong view. Another idea propounded by one of the schools of Indian philosophy holds that some kind of universal principle is the cause of everything. But in general, when we speak of wrong views, we are referring to the nihilistic view that holds to the non-existence of karma and rebirth, because that is the biggest obstacle to practice and progress on the path. It's like, if you think it through, you know, like if you're here and you thought it's just one lifetime, it's like, well, what's the goal here for you? What are you trying to do? And you just have to say, I'm just trying to be happy. I'm just trying to be happy in this life. But here, you know, you're going to go, well, you know, a lot of the causes for your unhappiness have come from the previous lives. And it's like, what can you do about that if you don't believe in that?
So are there degrees of wrong view? Because even if you say believe in an external creator or a universal principle, you could draw more beneficial conclusions from that rather than if you're a materialist, for instance, and just go, I'm just going to go all out for number one.
Sure.
So there are like a hierarchy of what's least destructive?
No. But you could still try and work it out, you know. Probably better off to believe in a non-existent God and be an ethical person than to believe just in materialism and go, nothing really matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from that point you go, well, yeah, I prefer to have this role of the creator God and try to help people be kind and so forth, and God doesn't exist. Yeah, so that way you can sort of make some distinction. But the thing about, you know, the wrong views, the worst thing is it just keeps you in. You're always locked into cyclic existence. There's no way out for you. Ben?
It's denying the existence of the
This one, like I said, specifically has to do with
I have heard that denying the existence of karma and the triple gem, like not understanding the triple gem, like on the potential side, not understanding that, because if you're a materialist, then there's no way to become a Buddha because that's like denying the triple gem.
And so, yeah, I said, you know, five of them. So this one is just called wrong view. It's a real simple one, but easy to remember, the wrong view. And so you probably have to remember what it refers to, like no karma, cause and effect, the idea that there's some sort of creative principle. Now, if that idea goes against karma, cause and effect, doesn't it? The idea of the creator. If there's an actual beginning cause, you know, and no conditions to support it. But then we have these others too, like view of the transitory collections, view holding to extremes, unworthy views, and morality and the sense of them. But probably the most important of these is a view of what they call the transitory collections. So this is the view of the transitory collections is seen as the root of samsara. But yeah, you see myself, but before you say ignorance was. So, but now you're telling me it's this view of the transitive collection. That's what I'm saying. So, what's basically said is that they're like something that they are different things, but they use different words to describe what the root of samsara is. So, So here, the view of the Transmute collection is an afflicted wisdom that, based on observing the appropriated aggregates, both with the body and mind, observing that, grasps at an inherently existent eye and mind. In other words, this discriminating mind takes the aggregates, meaning the body and mind, or some portion of the body and mind, as its object. Then, based on observing that conventional object, it imputes an inherently existent I, a self that exists inherently. Grasping at that inherently existent I, the mind goes on to impute all kinds of other objects, such as the aggregates, which are held to be inherently existent mind, inherently belonging to or part of the self.
Can you say the book on page
100? I guess it's on page 272. It's Geshe-la Volume 2, Karma, on Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. This afflicted wisdom grasps an I and mine and experiences them as inherently existent, when in fact they are merely imputed by the mind. Now, they only exist as imputations that arise based on observing their aggregates. They are empty of any inherent existence from their own side. The mistaken view that grasps eye and mind as inherently existent is called the view of the transitory collections, because the aggregates are constantly perishing moment by moment. Is the view of transitory collections, which is called the aggregates, are a combination of many different mental and physical phenomena that come together and are constantly evolving. Thus, the name of this wrong view is pointing directly at the impermanent, perishable nature of the body and mind, and emphasizing that they are not inherently existing things. He said, once you grasp onto the false conception of self, that self naturally becomes the center of all your concern and attention, your self-centered view. From there, all the remaining afflictions emerge. You become attached to this self. You become attached to two things belonging to this self, which you view as mine. You imagine a large separation between those things that are I and mine, and all other things and phenomena. Then anger and hatred arise when the I is frustrated and the mind is not respected. Then anger and hatred arise when the I is frustrated and the mind is not respected. So it goes. That's what's wrong. You hold it to extremes. Is an afflictive wisdom observing the self as perceived by the view of the transitory collections, seeing it as either permanent or as something that will not take a future rebirth after this life. So these are two extreme views. On the one hand, viewing the self as eternal, and on the other hand, not believing that due to karma there will be future rebirths. So this, I mean, this does take some time to get to sort of head around. I mean, one of our students here who's here for a while and just didn't get it. But it is that way. It'll take you some time to see through your own mistakes. You've got to keep making the mistake and seeing through it until you sort of get it. You can actually recognize I'm making a mistake and now I'm seeing it clearly.
So the view of the transitory collection, so there's the body and the mind, and then the view, is that like shorthand to say the wrong view of the transitory collection?
Yeah,
we grasp at it and we think it's permanent and
So these are all wrong views.
But actually viewing the transitory collection
as a me, as an I or mind.
As a being mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So look at the suffering. So either when you look at your body or your thoughts, they're either you or they don't belong to you.
And that's a wrong view.
Yeah, and because you are seen to be inherently existent, and what is mine is also seen to be inherently existent when they're not. That's the wrong view. Yeah. You're taking your body and the mind and yourself to exist in an impossible way, into a way that in fact does not exist, and thinking, well, that's me. So a bit like the idea of when a dog brushes past the mirror and it sees a dog. Yeah, whoa, falls up. But there's no dog there. And there's just a reflection of himself in the mirror. So we're the same, right? So we have the eye, and then it goes, whoa, that's me. But there's no eye there. It's just the man. Okay, let's have a look at how these wrong views work. But so the stage is, we've done this a couple of times before. Simply put, you can take any action and break it up into three parts. It always begins, it always ends, and it's a riddle. So here, the beginning is saying there's an intention to act, there's the action itself, and then the action finishes. Where a sense of satisfaction is a result. That's one way of doing it, a very simple way. The next way is for four steps. And the basis and the attitude are what's included in like that first one of intention. Then we have that performance, which is the action, and then the culmination, which is the satisfaction. And I'm primarily going to explain from that point of view, because when we come to look at purifying an action, it's also a matter of four parts. And those four parts tie into each of these four parts and show you how you can stop the activity from bearing its fruit. And how you, what they call purifying the mind, stop the karma from actually erupting and causing health problems. And finally, we have another one. We've got the basis, the perception, the attitude, usually all frictions, even put into four there. And then the conclusion is got the performance and the culmination of it. Now, it just depends upon who you have explained it to you, it's made up of different parts. That's a thing that I can remember. Okay, so then we'll have a look at these in a bit more detail. So when we look at the basis, here, in terms of the wrong view, you've got to have something pertaining to the Dharma that is true and that does exist. The attitude...
For example, like...
Oh, I'm sorry, because... Karma, three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. You just got to find something that does exist, even the person. You could say, you have a wrong view about a person. But it must exist. The attitude here has to include the perception, the motivation, and the affliction. So perceiving something that does exist to be non-existent. So karma does exist, and the thing of God doesn't. Does it? So there's part of the thing. But people are, I don't know about enlightenment. I'm in doubt about such a thing as enlightenment. Actually, but depending upon how you reason and what information comes to you, you go to doubt leading away or doubt leading towards a correct view. So you have to perceive something that does exist to be non-existent, and you're motivated by the desire to deny the existence of the three jewels, the four truths, harmony and its effects, emptiness, the pendulum connection, rebirth, and so many different things that you could take and go, well, these exist. But from the perspective of many other people, they go, well, I don't believe it. You have to prove to me they exist, show me they exist, and up to now, I don't know about them at all.
From this attitude with the affliction, could that be, say, if you're just really contrary and just like to shoot down whatever anybody says, so it's an attitude of just being against any view that...
Yeah, so then there'll be a wrong view too, yeah. There are views. I mean, you have to shoot down all views, that's a view. So the delusion, any of the three poisons. And so with this attitude, this is the most important part of it all. Then we have the action, which would include the performance. So it says here, to adopt the wrong view, it's got these four types of adoption. You have to disparage causes, thinking that virtuous and non-virtuous behavior don't exist. Then you have to disparage effects. The results of the behavior don't exist. Disparaging activities concerning, you know, karmic seeds, rebirth, taking spontaneous birth, all those sort of things. Fourth, disparaging existing phenomena, thinking that the Buddha's, the Bodhisattva, the Arahant, and so forth do not exist. And then as completion, you decide your wrong view is correct, you have to have five factors. So you've actually got to be confused, a confusion that doesn't actually understand the phenomena. You have to argumentative attitude, delighting in disparagement. A stubborn attitude is the third one, due to reflecting on incorrect teachings, before denying that the three jewels of karma and sufficiency exist. And lastly, an actively sort of integrity, not wanting to be free from the faults of these wrong views. We look at the history of science, right? That's full of people coming up with wrong views and not ever wanting to let them go. And then they have to die. And then it's like, now the right people come in. And that's just in science, I feel.
Also, a lot of what you're saying just sounds like some really bad arguments that I've had.
Yeah,
that's right. Just denying that any harm has happened or denying that you've had anything to do with it and then being really stubborn about it. And so it may not even be, like I always thought it was maliciousness, but it could actually be it's wrong view.
Well, like I said, you have to be sort of confused. It's up when you actually don't understand the phenomenon. But you also know that sometimes you might even find yourself done it yourself, that you're confused and you don't actually want to understand the phenomenon, you just want to be right. You just want to be, you know, seeing something. Yeah, I want to win. Like that.
So in terms of arguments then, like you said right at the beginning, that wrong views was the heaviest of the three, which is kind of strange because in a way I think, maybe malice is because it's got hatred, but here it's saying like wrong views is the heaviest because it keeps us the most stuck.
Yeah, but if you go for malice, you go, well, malice comes out of wrong views. You know, if you have the correct view of karma, there's no way you'd want to hurt anybody. You realize immediately, every moment of malice I have hurts me. And here I am trying to be happy. It's like, hang on, that's not working. Yeah, so you find me, like this is, yeah, the root of this is a wrong view, a confusion about ourselves and the world we find ourselves in. We're just confused. And we've got these wrong ideas that you think are true. So we need to be sort of open-minded enough to challenge ourselves to go, well, you know, I've come and at least the world, you know, I know in the West here, primary causes will seem to be physical, brain stuff. And then if you've had a look at the history of psychology in the West, it's pretty horrifying, especially in terms of the invention of different types of pharmaceuticals and so forth. I'm not saying like it has helped, no doubt about it. But it cannot put an end to suffering because it's actually dealing with the wrong causes. It's dealing with physical material when the actual causes of suffering are mental. But it can influence the mind through playing with the brain and using pharmaceuticals. But that's the primary place where the suffering is coming from. So let's have a look at the next slide of the film, or the weight of these wrong views. Again, so the first, we begin with the attitude, right? So any negative action or any wrong view becomes heavier if it's performed under the influence of intense anger, attachment, or ignorance. The performance, the next one, of any negative action is greater gravity when we engage in it with joy and satisfaction. And when we praise ourselves or someone else, but when we do the action repeatedly or constantly, and when we perform it adequately and purposely, and when it is against the kind or the weak. Thirdly, the absence of an antidote, so there's no shame, no embarrassment, no remorse or confession. When we perform a negative action without a countervailing activity, we mitigate its power, the suffering effect is heavier. With no antidote, like a vow or the application of the mental factors of regret, embarrassment or shame, and without knowledge of the different forms of paths, the weight of the negative power can be increased. The perversity, the strong belief that you're right, refers to the actions that are based on perverted views, distorted concepts of spiritual practice, which can lead us to believe that doing harm is beneficial. Now, this has happened in the past, but if you read some of those stories, I mean, one of the great stories of one of the Buddha's greatest students turned out to be a mass murderer called Anguni Mala. So it's an interesting story about Anguni Mala. So he had a master, a spiritual mentor, and Anguni Mala was the favorite of his spiritual teacher. His teacher had a high hopes of it. But then the teacher noticed how much attention his wife was paying Anguni Mala.
The teacher's wife.
Yeah. And then he got jealous and angry about this. And so then he said to Anguni Mala that he could attain what he was seeking. If he were able to kill like 1,000 people. So Anguni Mala basically just wiped out the countryside that was around his place. It's one of the first stories of a mass murderer, story of spiritual development. And to keep a tab on the people he killed, he had to kill 1,000, he took their little finger. And he put a broken, made up a necklace of them, and he wears them. And if anybody was out there in the countryside, you better look out. This bloke was out there. And he had 999 to go. Of course, it's, like I said, very few people left. And
one to go.
But he remembers mum. Mum was at home. Don't get me mother. So off he sets to go murder his mother. And his brother, and the brother goes, like, I'm going to stop this fellow. And he does. And Anguni Mala becomes a disciple of the Buddha. And in that very lifetime, he came to the state of an arahant. But can you imagine being known as a mass murderer and then changing, deciding, oh, I was wrong. My God, I've been misled. But 999 people are dead. And then now you're walking around in monk's robes. And you have to go and beg for your food in the last living population. Oh, good luck and good luck. Now, of course, all of the survivors, anybody who knew them, was, you know, angry as heck about it. And it's been, of course, you know, a really difficult time.
But he showed real remorse.
Yes, he did.
Right at the very last minute.
Yeah, he did. Like, he actually was able to see the Buddha was able to convince him that he was on a mistaken path, he had a mistaken idea, he was wrong, and his guru had to stand up. Yeah, but because he had this great guru devotion. But like, yeah, so the result of all this is not at the end of Anguni Mala's life, he found himself in the hell world or the lower realm. So he didn't. That never happened. Because he was able to develop himself from the remorse. You know, as soon as he knew he was wrong, he changed his life. But in fact, if you notice, what's the really good jail crime series on television.
Yeah, Time.
Called Time.
We talked about it last week.
Yeah. And it was a similar type thing. A bloke has killed somebody through drunken driving, and Adam's remorse and this terrific challenge and his willingness to help everybody else. And with the knowledge in his own mind, I cannot even make this up. You know, because I can't bring that kid back to life when I kill him. But what I can do is try to be a good person and help others as much as I can. And so, Anguni Mala did a similar thing. First of all, the strengths of these rivalries were fair for so the object has to exist.
Mm-hmm.
The strength. So here it's like, you know, the strength, you've got the recipient, or in other words, the. So these could be, you know, rivalries about the three jewels, society, close friends, children, family.
And what's the strongest? Like, we're talking about strength, right? So is that, are they all strong, or is it?
Yeah, these are the strongest fields, because these are the people that do the strongest recipients, because these people are the people that do the very best and kindest things to you. So since here, the recipient contributes to the strength of an action, means the action becomes powerful in relation to the object or recipient towards whom it's directed. The most powerful recipients are the guru, the triple gem, those who have higher realizations, and our parents. But because they are there to extend the most kindness to us. Then, in terms of the object, the activity, of course, is the role of you. Support the person's thinking and find this attitude. The action becomes powerful and strong in relation to the way one thinks of the activity as they approach it, as they carry it out, and as it's concluded. The attitude is basically four parts, which includes its path, the interest, goal, and duration. Well, I think I'll put that slide in, but as you can see, it gets more and more finer. Well, so next one, please. So then, this is a quote from Arya Nagarjuna from Letter to a Friend. He said, understand your thoughts to be like figures drawn on water, sandy soil, or carved in stone. Of these, for tainted thoughts, the first is the best. While when you long for Dharma, it's the last. You understand what's being said here? When you're thinking about negative things, things that are going to produce phenomena, it's best that these actions are like written on water. As you can see, you might eat them on water, it's only there while you write it. And as soon as you stop, it's gone. That's quite, it's fun drawing on water, isn't it? You know, like as you do it, it really looks real, but it's just like there and gone.
So is that like, say you get really frustrated, you can go, oh, I could just kill them. And that's it.
That's it.
That's like written on water.
Yeah, and no more from there. That's it. Just a verbal thing, just this noise, and that's it. Yeah. But like Marvin, when I was stolen from, my negative thoughts were like the figures carved in stone. Going over it and over it and over it and over it. And even though it took back more than 20 years, I can still remember it. Like I just talked to you about it, because it's locked in. Yeah, so they say, instead of that, well, the good things, make them like carbon and stone, get them deeply into your memory, into your way of being. But for the bad things, no, because they're coming and going out. Don't hold on to them, don't go over them. Now, these activities are going to bring about different types of results. Yeah, I quite like this verse, but I used to like draw a little water myself. You know, you can draw and see it coming out, but as it's coming out, it's gone. And I always like looking at that, you know. It's the same when water goes down the plank, you know, the plank hole, isn't it? Yeah, it turns up this like a whirlpool. Looks very real, and by saying there for a moment, it's gone. And this is how we should look at our negativities. But, you know. Then we have these three types of results, but you can see if we've got the ripening cause, a ripening result. A causally concordant result, and then we've got an environmental result. Now, these are three types of results. But these causally concordant results, we talk about in terms of experience and behavior. Now, the ripening result, you know, it's called a fruition, and this is what we call the rebirth. So, in terms here of a small result in terms of wrong view. It's to be reborn as an animal. If it was even a little bit heavier than that, it would be rebirth as a hungry ghost, and heavier than that, rebirth in the hell realms. So remember, it's like this heaviness, the weight of it, the heaviness of it, can be accumulated just through time. As you remember, you said before, that small action can lead to a large result.
Is that like when, say, you hold on to a grudge, so it becomes very solid and part of your whole being and identity, and then it colours everything?
And you probably get physically sick as well. Yeah, that's right. So it sort of grows. It becomes more and more malignant. It affects you more and more. So something might have been that story on Charles Dickens wrote, what's about that? Mrs. Havisham? That lived in the old house? Yeah, Great Expectations. So there's a similar type thing. This little thing happened to when she was a girl, right? But it influenced her whole life. She was an old woman in this house. And you can find this throughout history. You might even find things like this could be yourself or somebody you know. Something happened to them. From our point of view, it might not be all that big, but it grew. But they held on to it. They thought about it. And their whole life became altered by this way of thinking. But now here's these other two types of results. So this is more like for where we are. So we missed the ripening result, the fruition result of the wrong view, because here we are as human beings, right? But as we're humans, now we can get these other two types of results. So these are two types of results similar to the cause. One of them called results corresponding to the experiences. So this would mean that we are led astray by wrong views ourselves. You know, so I watched a documentary yesterday called The Great Hack. Oh man, that was like frightening. And what was it about? It was about this group of people who mine our behavior. So everything you do on social media is data mined. And whatever you do, like you can't lie about it, it's done. You did it. Right? They grab all that information and then they know this is the sort of person you are. This is what you're interested in. And they give it back to you for you to make a decision that they want you to make. Now, it's a weapon. It's a political weapon. But too bad. It's like some advertising agencies that have been hired by political parties to use it. And they use it as a weapon. And they got the results they wanted.
So karmically, we're involved in it. It happens to us. It's easy to be manipulated.
Through these wrong views, through manipulated views. So now we get this. Now, at this time of our life, that all is coming back at us, isn't it?
Yeah, because so many people ask, because there are so many views out there, how do you even figure out what's true and what's not? It's so difficult to sort it out. So that's part of the result corresponding to the experience. Of having wrong views in the past.
That's right.
And they were susceptible to them.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So now we get the experience at present. And the second one was results corresponding to the behavior. So yeah, you just don't go online and go, well, you find a lot of people behaving with these wrong views.
Of just briefing that they're right.
Yeah,
that their opinion is right.
They're sharing it. And even we might too, you know, like when COVID was like full on, there was lots of ideas floating around, wasn't there? And people become quite rigid in what they thought was true and what was false.
Actually, I read a lot online about this is the bane of university professors of all the younger students putting in essays and things of just their opinions that with no basis in any fact.
Yeah. So then we have this, you know, we come across them and we behave like that again. but we share the wrong views of good. This is the behavior. The other is the experience that we actually have them.
Racism and bigotry and prejudice come in of this perpetuating views like that.
Yeah, because the behavior, yeah, where you start rebehaving, like their behavior, like that, yeah. Well, the behavior follows what you did in the past. But the fact that you buy into it, you have this experience of it, is because of the same sort of thing that you encountered in the past. This brings about an environmental result. So basically, if you sort of lack a home, you don't welcome anywhere, you're sort of homeless, no protection. Wherever you live, there are very few crops, waters dry up, the resources are exhausted. The society you find yourself in is chaotic. And so the place itself is polluted.
I know, I'm thinking this is like the news. This is like current affairs.
Yeah, it's unfortunately the result of the karmic result of these types of
things.
Wrong views. Yeah, but I'll say to Rick and I still have to, you know, like Aboriginal common. I saw a thing on Facebook where they found this beautiful carved horse, 30,000 years old. It was found up in Scandinavia, but the horse itself came out of Asia. And I look at that Asia, Scandinavia, that's a long way. And there's this beautiful carved horse. So I was looking at 30,000 years, 40,000 years ago, human beings created this piece of beauty. Yeah. And I go, okay, but in the last 200 years, man, we've brought the world to near extinction. So for like 30, 40, even older, you go, it took all the time to get to the last 200 to 300 years, and now we can just wipe everything out. That's because of views.
Yeah, well, we have 60,000 years of Indigenous culture in Australia that was very stable and had its equilibrium for all that time. And then in the last 100 years, climate extremes and crisis and pollution. So,
yeah, you know, you track it back and you're probably. So this idea based, which is a view, that's what a view is. You have an idea about things.
So even with, say, with climate change, which comes from, you know, denying cause and effect,
yeah.
I mean, that's not even denying karma, it's just denying out on the cause and effect.
Sure. Yeah. So, this brings us to the end of this, our topic on these world views. So what's the takeaway?
Remember, your future depends entirely on the actions you take now.
Yep, it's true. What else?
And, you know, the stages and results of a non-virtuous wrong view.
And of course, like I said, there's much more to it in the books. Especially to those five wrong views. You know, if you guys have a look at them and unpack that, there's even more there, like I said. And in fact, only one of our FPMT teachers, when he started his first courses about the Dharma, he started off with a wrong view. And he said, what is the view, first of all? And it's basically what you think. And that's the view. You have an idea of how things are. And you go, well, what is that? Can you say something about it? And then what happens, of course, you can find yourself quite out of whack, you know, especially when you introduce the Buddhist view, you go, oh my God, things are dependent and they're also empty. You know, virtue actually causes happiness, and non-virtue causes suffering, and the stuff that's going on in our mind here, it's sort of mentally created. But I've started saying this. But there's a very different view for it than what we normally give to us, the way of being in the world. As you probably all know, massive encouragement to be independent.
And yet,
to think that we can exist independently of everyone else. It's impossible. We can't. 40,000 years ago, not that. You know, what we do has consequences, as we're finding out, global consequences. So I said, the lovely thing about the Buddhist view is one is wisdom and method combined. So you know, in terms of the method, it's simple. Do not create harm. It's that simple sort of thing. And then in terms of the wisdom, you go everything exists dependently. We can't get out of this interdependent relationship of one another in the world. We're in it. And to think that we're not, and to act as if we weren't, that is it's a wrong view. That's right. That's completely against the facts. So we have to sort of change those notes. And so one of the ways you can help yourself is to have a look at this material that we've covered from pages 65 to 67, 80 to 92. You'll see it up there, it's in the LTC notes, 7 to 9, 25 to 36. And next week we'll start looking at the 10 virtuous paths. So we looked at the non-virtuous paths. And next week we quickly go over the paths of restraint. Let's dedicate what we've understood in this material towards ourselves working in harmony with karma, cause and effect, by acknowledging that everything exists in mere name. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, we are quickly attain a state of the Buddha and leave all living beings without exception without a master state. May the Supreme Guru, Bodhicitta, like the poem of Master, may that goal have no decline, increase forevermore, and as long as space endures, and as long as thinking beings abide, may my two remains be the start of the silence of the world. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you enjoyed and take something away in use. And for those online, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks once again, everyone. May all living beings be released from their miseries and experience happiness forever.
Yes.
Yes.